This is Forum. I'm John Michaels, Public Affairs Radio Director, going to be talking about, well, human trafficking, prostitution, things that people don't like to talk about in Sioux Falls, with Kimberly St. John, Shelter Director, and Carrie Stevenson, Legal Advocate for my sister's friend's house. And there's an Indian name for that too, right?
Mita Mashke Tiki.
And you're located here in Sioux Falls. A lot of people thought, well, that's something on the reservation. But there's a lot of connections between the reservation and what's going on in Sioux Falls.
That is correct. We are actually under Wachoni Wauwokia Incorporated, which is located on the Crow Creek Reservation. So we're kind of like
a satellite
office.
The thing that I was talking about before we started the program was that I do know a lot of the motorcycle clubs, the most dangerous ones, the Diablos, the Hells Angels and that, they've been coming up through the reservations to the way the Sturgis and that, and taking advantage of a lot of the young women who are in some of the poorest counties in the United States, and taking advantage of that.
Yes, that's very true. I have family that live down on Pine Ridge, and this has been a problem for a very long time, just in general with them coming through. The certainly women and the young men also are people that are subject to this type of abuse and trafficking.
They're trying to do things about it. I know that our U.S. Attorney General and also Kristi Noem recently has stepped in to say, what can we do to stop this human trafficking? Now, human trafficking isn't a term that we heard even five years ago in South Dakota. But tell us, we had human trafficking back then, but now we're calling it human trafficking.
Usually, the term that we use is sexual transactions, because when you bring up the word human trafficking or prostitution, that really causes people to kind of shut down and shut up about it. They don't want to think about it on that level, because a lot of the times the victims really don't want to realize what they're forced into.
And human trafficking can involve a lot, not just the sexual transactions. You can have labor forces. There's like 8 different realms with it. I don't remember all of them, but it can also include with organ transplants and organ trafficking. So what we specifically are talking about is, as Kimberly said, the sexual transactions that are going on.
But that can be also kids.
That is true.
That is correct.
A lot of times I think people hear the word human trafficking, they think of the Russians or the Europeans bringing women over, promising them jobs in New York, and then saying, well, we're going to hurt your family if you don't do what we tell you, that type of thing that we see on the movies. But it's not all like that, is it?
No, it's not. Trafficking issues truly have gone on for a long time, and really throughout the history of the United States. The forced marches that the Indian people had to do, there was trafficking or sexual transactions that went on, because, again, it's a predator economic situation. You have to have something, and they have what you need in order to live. And so this is not truly something new, and it's not because of the Russians coming over or anybody from another country. It's what's happened to the people that were indigenous to the United States.
People who are vulnerable. We've talked before in this program about a woman in a bar in downtown Sioux Falls being picked up and trained to be a prostitute because she was going through a divorce and was vulnerable, and these predators sense that. That's something that actually happened in Sioux Falls. But yet, the people that are the predators, we did pass some legislation, I think, a couple years ago to go after them. I see arrests for the prostitutes. Now they're going to try and update that a little bit to, they're really victims. And are we really going after the people that are enabling this or making the money out of this?
I think it's what we know that with the Sioux Falls police that we're trying to do is we're trying to go after the Johns, and we're trying to go after the pimps. And with the women or men who are identified as victims, we're really trying to communicate to them that it's okay to come forward, and let's go after who is really responsible for forcing you into this.
I know that Brendan Johnson had stated that that's what he was looking at, and that we've had several meetings with him and spoken to him, and that's what he's looking at.
Yeah, he's got a passion, I think, to address that. And like I say, Kristi Noem has had some meetings on it, and some of the other representatives. But and Brendan, I think, a lot of people thought he should run for his father's office, but I think he's got so many things he wants to do as a U.S. attorney that he's really, you know, wants to accomplish some things in that, yes. That he wants to finish. But Kimberly and Carrie, the aspect of you coming in and setting up shop here in Sioux Falls, what does that say?
You know, well, we've been here since 2000, and originally we're essentially what we're saying as we're helping those that identify as victims is that you have a safe place to go. You have advocates, you have good, sound people in your community that are going to stand with you through this horrific process that you're going to have to undergo.
A lot of times people early on a Sunday morning like this program, they have the privacy and anonymity of nobody knows they're listening to this program. If they know somebody or they have been in or they have someone controlling them, what can you say to them right now?
Well, first of all, if you know someone or if you're seeing some of it, please, please don't approach them yourself. It puts that person that's going through that situation in harm's way and danger as well as yourself. You could call the non-emergency number if you see something going on that you're concerned about. Certainly if there's something bigger going on, please call 911. If it's somebody that you just are having a conversation with, you can tell them they can call. Our number's in the 211 Resource Center. If you yourself are going through it, there is hope out there. There is help out there. And to, again, call us. We can help you with a safety plan and how to, you know, get out of it and keep yourself and any of those that you're concerned with. You know, a lot of times the women have children. So if you're worried about that, we can help you with a safety plan.
A lot of them are so controlled, they don't have any money. They don't, you know, and their family is threatened. But to get away from their pimp, they have to be able to get away for a certain amount of time. Otherwise, they just go back. And you're shaking your head, yes.
Well, you know, we know that with the domestic violence statistics, so women will usually leave 14 to 22 times before they're either killed. And when we look at prostitution and human trafficking, we know that a lot of the times the violence is substantially increased because that control and that you're that person's that pimp's moneymaker. And you take that moneymaker away, you know, they're going to come after everyone that you've ever loved, ever associated with. They have other women or other people out there scoping out where you could be, and you know, it just
it's you're considered a product. And I went through my own time frame of being trafficked, so I can tell you that each time any type of information or contact, even between a 14 and 22 times, I always took something else away. So even if it's just that one little thing that you find out, that one more bit of information to finally be able to break away, it is very important. So I encourage anyone to call us. Again, we don't judge. We give resources, offer just, you know, an ear to listen to. A lot of times you just need to listen and hear what the person's going through, and they need to know. I know for me, I needed to know that somebody really did care about it, really understood it. So being able to give that to somebody else that's going through this is very, very important.
And we also understand, too, that during this leaving process is going to be the increase of becoming a fatality increases like about 100%.
This is not the kind of thing that a law enforcement officer wants to get involved with. It's dangerous. It's more dangerous than going into a marriage dispute even. You know, you never know what you're walking into, but these are people that really do threaten, and when they threaten, they mean it.
Yes, they do. Yes, they do.
Yes.
So it is a very touchy situation for the law enforcement. It's also touchy for advocates. And so certainly for anybody that, you know, just the general public out there, that's why we say, please don't try to approach any situation yourself. You know, call. You can call and just get general information if you need to from us, or the Compass Center also is a place that you could call. Be Free is certainly a place that you can call and just get some general information and find out really what's going on with this. But
there
keep yourself safe.
We tried to do a program on this during Sturgis in a year or so ago, and the police advised us not to. It was too dangerous. Now, if the police are advising us not to even do a radio program during Sturgis, that shows that there's more underground than we see.
That is true. There's a lot more underground and a lot more going on. And please keep in mind that the people that are buying the other people are going to have a good income. I am not saying that somebody that is working for minimum wage is never going to go to a prostitute or try to do that. I'm saying for the most part, though, that those that are keeping this business going, they've got to have a good income. So you have a higher echelon. And that can be a very scary thing for the person that's being trafficked as well as for the advocates.
Well, that's one thing about the motorcycle gangs coming up through Nebraska, through the reservations, the Sturgis, because they bring prostitution, but they also bring drugs. And the two seem to go together, don't they?
That is correct. A lot of times when victims are, you know, like we were discussing before the show, you don't wake up one day and say, I want to be a prostitute, or I want to be, you know, forced into something, or I want to be controlled and have all my identity taken away. So there has to be some sort of, you know, alcohol can be used, drugs can be used, and pretty soon, you know, women and the men that we've worked with in this field who have identified as victims have said that, you know, they've used that against them. And so they get them hooked on these drugs, they get them hooked on alcohol, and it becomes a coping mechanism for the victims. And so when they try to get out of that type of situation and get away and get to safety, they have to deal with withdrawals, they have to deal with, maybe they have some felony charges on their record that's going to inhibit them from moving forward, getting housing. We know that housing is huge here in Sioux Falls. There's a huge need for it. I mean, there's like a, 4 to 8 year waiting list. And, you know, only then can you get on housing if you don't have anything on your background. And a lot of times these victims are forced to do things that cause them to end up in the court systems, and they will take the fall for their pimps.
It's as simple as whether it's credit card fraud, stealing someplace. So there's a lot of different issues when someone is being trafficked that they're going to have to deal with when they're trying to get out of the life. It's not just the embarrassment, because a lot of times that's what it is, shame and embarrassment of how many times you've slept with somebody and what you did in those sexual acts. There's a lot of other things besides the drugs and the alcohol.
Well, it's not your grandmother's pimp.
No.
No.
My mom used to talk about girls being brought in for the farm show back, you know, a long time ago. But that's not the same type as we're looking at now. You're talking about national networks. That, you know, we're talking about major crime
syndicates
in a big way, because it's human trafficking is going to surpass drug as the number one crime in America.
Yes, and eventually. They're wearing business suits. They're in the higher echelon. Even when you were talking about with the motorcycle gangs, and I can tell you this, I won't tell you which gang, but I knew some of the ones in it, and they weren't always out on their Harleys or whatever it was. They had higher paying jobs. They wore 3-piece business suits, and they were meeting with executives. So as you said, it's a different kind of era with the drugs, the human trafficking, all of it.
Speaking with Kimberly St. John, shelter director, and Carrie Stevenson, legal advocate for my sister's friend's house here in Sioux Falls. And Kimberly, you mentioned, I caught just a bit ago, you know, we mentioned women, we mentioned children, but you mentioned boys also in human trafficking.
Yeah, we've definitely worked with some. Now they're older, of course, some men who were actually, what happened is, one of the victims that came forward happened to be a male, and he said what had happened to him was that basically, you know, this happened in a different state. His uncle handcuffed him, beat the ever living daylights out of him, handcuffed him to a woman, and sold him for $300 in EBT.
That's why the mayor and the Chamber of Commerce don't like me talking about this, about Sioux Falls. It's not exactly what we want to put forward. But we've done a good job of keeping gangs out of Sioux Falls, because we took a kind of offense early. And the gangs are still here, but we don't let them get a foothold in it. And if we, you know, want to plan for the 25 future of Sioux Falls, I think we need to plan on how can we not be like Omaha, mm-hmm. Or Worthington, Minnesota, or Minneapolis. How can we learn from that? I think in Minneapolis, if you're caught as a John, they put your face up, your mugshot up on the internet. Now that's kind of a good deterrent, isn't mm-hmm. it?
It's yes, a good yes. shaming technique, you know. Mm-hmm. Is it, who wants to have their face on a billboard or be publicly shamed for something that they're embarrassed about and something that they're, you know, you're buying another human being. I mean, that is exactly what is mm-hmm. happening. And you're buying that human being for your sexual gratification. Right. Now, that is something to be very ashamed of.
And I think the first step is to admit that it is happening. And once you do that, that awareness, and then keep going forward with it.
Well, the police department, I think, is you know, doing a great job. They're evolving.
Yes.
The Christy Noem, I think, has put a federal spotlight onto it. Johnson, the U.S. attorney, is definitely doing some important work on it. So there's good things happening, but are we really getting the people that are making the money?
We're working on that. Remember, our part of it with and we don't usually call them victims. We usually call them survivors. But with the women, with the men, we're working on getting them healed. And we're working on those steps. And what we like with the people that we're working with in the police department is they understand that. And so any types of talks that are going back and forth, they get the fact that not all the women are going to give up all the pimps' names, all the John's names. And just building that type of rapport, though, has helped with some of the cases where they are going forward and prosecuting. And so it's really important that we work together as a community. I think the connections that we've made with the police department are just, they're just wonderful. They really are. We know that we can call them at any point in time, and it doesn't have to just be on trafficking. It can be on a sexual assault case. It can be on a domestic violence case. It can be on a I've got a question for you case. And that's what's really important there. And then the comfortability that's going out there. And by the word will get out. The word gets out with some of our other survivors, even if they're not ready to totally get out of the life. They're able to say there's good connections that we have and there's good police officers that we can talk to.
Kimberly, Carrie, how many survivors have gone through the My Sister's Friend's House protection in Sioux Falls?
Since 2000?
Mm-hmm.
Oh,
that's, you know, one too many for us, honestly, because if you look at, we have our numbers, we have our stats, and when you just come across one victim that has just horrifically just been beaten, and, you know, within human trafficking, there's just so much violence. I mean, I think people think that it has to do with sex and forced sex. No, there's domestic violence that goes on. There's stalking, there's sexual assault, and all that is just a vicious cycle. So for us, you know, it is one too many. For the community, when they listen to us, they should be very concerned about what their children are seeing, what their sons are seeing and being exposed to, because these pimps and these Johns are everywhere. And, you know, it's one too many.
It is. I can tell you this much, though, just in the last 6 months, because the awareness has been out there that we definitely work with people that have gone through this, our numbers have tripled just on that part of it. So that's a good thing. That's a good thing that people know that we're out there, that we work with domestic violence, sexual violence, as well as people that have been trafficked.
Well, they can come to you and disappear, basically. You protect them from their pimp, I guess. Disappear from their pimp, I guess you might say. And that's needed. How long does it take to be able to, you know, alcohol, you know, has a certain time that you can take them to detox, you know, whatever. Crack cocaine takes a long time. But this is something that's almost like PTSD, I guess, in a sense. They never get over the trauma.
No, and that's part of it. I think as society, I think we try to put a time limit on when you should be healed mm-hmm. from all the violence that your body and mind has gone through. And that's one thing that we don't do. at my sister friend's house. And that's one thing that we're members of the South Dakota Coalition Ending Domestic and Sexual Violence. We have, there's 9 reservations throughout the state, and we usually, I think on all those, are near those reservations, we have sister programs. And we are all standing in unison with, there is no time limit that should be put on when a survivor should be completely healed from this type of violence.
In other words, if they come to you, you take care of them as long as they have a threat, I would imagine.
As long as feasible and where they are with their healing and what they want. When I was talking about like even a safety plan, and you will find a lot of brochures out there about here's your safety plan. What we do is the woman herself, she's the one that can tell us the safety plan. She's the one that's going to be able to teach us what her needs are.
Because she knows her abuser the best.
Correct. So that healing process, you know, it can vary for people. And so the biggest thing is, where are you at? What do you need right now, and what resources for what you need are out there? So we just help walk them through it. And even if they're not in shelter any longer, wherever they are, if they call us and they need some help and we can provide that for them or get them to where they need to be, then that's what we do.
One thing about the Vietnam War is we learned what PTSD really is. They called it shell shock, or just pull yourself up by your bootstraps in World War II. But well, other names for it. But I guess they say PTSD for a war veteran is almost like a woman getting raped.
Yes.
You don't get over it. You learn to live with it.
Correct.
Yes.
You learn how you change your coping skills. Maybe your coping skill at first was drinking or drugs. You learn to change that into a healthier coping skill. You learn to grow with it. I know for mine, that's what I've had to do. And there are times that I have to reroute that and learn another coping skill because maybe it's just not working to keep the flashbacks back away. So those are the things that we also help provide and talk to them about and try to keep it as natural and as healing and healthy and individual that we possibly can.
And Carrie, you've been there.
Yes, I have.
That's what I'm saying is, if you can do it, they can hear that, hopefully, and say, maybe I can do it. You know what I'm saying.
And I'd never like to make it about me. The only reason I talk about what I went through is so that people will know that there is help out there, that you can go ahead and have a quote-unquote normal life. That's what you hear a lot with anybody that's gone through trafficking. Well, don't you just want a normal life? Well, I have a normal as it can be for what I've been through.
And the definition of normal, really, you have to think about how that changes, because what one person might deem as normal, you know, we wouldn't.
Right, right. And so it's just important to remember that you don't have to compare yourself to anybody else. You can walk your own path and you can get through this.
Well, Kimberly and Carrie, like I say, Carrie, you being through this, you can speak the language. I can talk about statistics and things and things that I've experienced, but it's not the same. Where you talk on the same level, and it can be a good, you know, helping other people. Those who have been through it have the responsibility to help those yet to come.
Correct.
And that's really what you're doing. You're using your experience to help those at their need.
Correct. That's what we try to do, and that's something that Kimberly and many others have mentored me on and helped me to do. So that process is great, and that ability to be able to do this and to give back and to help anyone is very close to my heart. And, you know, I really have to thank Kimberly with helping to bring out that part of me. So, you know, those are big kudos.
How are you funded? Do churches work with you?
We do actually. We're specifically funded through Wachoni Wauwokia Incorporated. Back in 2006, we went underneath Lisa Hess program, and she has a shelter called Project Safe and then a child advocacy center in Crow Creek. And so she took our program under her wing, so to say, so that way we could stay open, because what we saw was a need, and not just what I mean by what I saw, the grandmothers before me, what they saw was a need for there to be a shelter in Sioux Falls, because people were Native Americans. We don't just serve Native Americans, but a lot of the times 95% of the women that we do serve are Native, and we're more culturally sensitive to their needs. So basically, we're funded through the grants to tribal governments through the federal government.
And so why is it called My Sister's Friend's House?
Because we're all moshkes. So it's like we're all sisters because we're all, I mean, culturally speaking, we're all related. We take that kind of a step further and say, you know, our sisters are hurting. Right. Our brothers are hurting. This is what we can do when we wake up in the morning from the time that we go to bed to make sure that we are creating safety, awareness, education, and accountability.
And showing those healthy relationships and that idea that we are responsible for each other is a very important thing. As Kimberly said, mostly 95% that come are Native. There's other cultural aspects with it too, other women that have come from other cultures. And we're sensitive to that and make them feel comfortable.
Yeah, like I was talking earlier, the four biggest prostitution rings in Minneapolis are Sudanese. So it changes geographically, but it's still the oldest story in the book. Kimberly, why is this your mission?
It's our mission because we want to see society change. You know, there has to be change in it, and it has to be systemic change, and it has to be, it has to start somewhere. And it has to really begin, too, with men standing up and saying, you know what, I'm not going to tolerate hearing that. I'm not going to tolerate that behavior from you. As a man, that is not how you act. You know, a lot of people will say that this is a war on women, and women have, you know, within the feminist movement, been fighting this war for a long time. Mm-hmm. And so we ask ourselves, where are our brothers? Where are our warriors? Right. Where are the men that we love, and when are they going to start standing beside us?
I remember finding a book in the Sioux Falls Library that was printed back in the 1950s about South Dakota law. Back then, you could have your wife committed if she asked for a divorce.
Yes.
Yes.
We've come a ways from that.
Mm-hmm.
You know, like I say, that it used to be that not that long ago. Again, back to the person right now. Carrie, how did you decide to get out and break? What was it that made you get to that point where you could do that?
You have to understand, first of all, it doesn't just happen, as Kimberly said, just bing. It is a process when you get into it, and all of a sudden you realize you're into it. And then other factors, family, children, whatever. So then how do you get out of it? And with what I went through was many, 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 many years ago. So the movement just on domestic and sexual violence was happening about the time that I'm trying to get out of this. It was a matter of people being there for me, people talking to me, a do or die situation, which is often what I see now with any of the women. It's, I'm either going to be dead tonight, yes, or I'm going to get away tonight.
What can you say to that person that's at that point right now?
Call us. Call 211 if nothing else. Call the police department if you can get away. There are places out there in South Dakota, across the United States. Call and see what help you can get.
I think there's more of a view now as the prostitute, as the victim, which,
yes,
if you watch Law and Order on TV, you know, that's, you know, sometimes I guess we got to say Sioux Falls is getting to be more like.
And please understand, if they do go back, if it's somebody that you know that goes back, they have their reasons. Mm-hmm. They have what in their head, reasons and why they need to do it. So judging them isn't what you need to do. What you need to do is keep putting that hand out and helping them.
And really it comes down to we need to stop blaming the victims.
Right.
Because they are not the ones who are perpetrating their own abuse. You know, we need to hold the perps accountable, the Johns accountable, and we need to say as society that we are not going to tolerate this type of abuse or this kind of treatment to another human being.
Well, Kimberly St. John, Shelter Director Carrie Stevenson, Legal Advocate, My Sister's Friend's House. Now, if they're in duress right now, they can call 911.
Correct.
That is
if
correct.
If they're listening, no one has to know they're listening to this, they can call 211, which is the helpline.
Correct.
And they'll put you in touch.
Correct.
24 hours, 7 days a week. If it's 2 o'clock on a Sunday morning, don't worry. They can call and put you in touch with the people that you need, even a psychiatrist or whatever you need. If you're suicidal, whichever, they can connect you with that. But the main thing, I guess, is Is there anything that the neighborhood of Sioux Falls can do, the family of Sioux Falls can do to help?
Just know that we're out there and we're working with the police department and, you know, the state's attorney's office and, you know, Brendan Johnson, and we are watching.
It takes a village to raise a child. It takes a village to take care of families, too. I want to thank you very much for being with us on Forum.
Thank you.